Welcome to the airport lounge. Table for two gentlemen? Right this way. Here's your booth. Have a great show.
Welcome to the Airport Lounge, the Winnipeg Jets podcast, much like the trade deadline, a bunch of hype for nothing. I'm Mike Guthrie, and I'm joined, as always, by my good friend and a guy who's voted most likely to be logical in high school, Vaughn Mitchell. How's it going, buddy?
Well, Mike, things are tough. Performance is down. Key indicators are trending negative. Past sources of strength are underperforming. Supply chains have been disrupted. Long-term prosperity is in question. And no, I'm not talking about the Canadian economy. I'm talking about the Winnipeg Jets.
Nice. Well, we're going to change things up a little in terms of format. Since the last time we recorded, obviously there was the NHL trade deadline came and went. And we're going to have a quick trade deadline segment. Both you and I think it's fair to say, were reasonably to very disappointed in the Winnipeg Jets' lack of activity on that front. And I'm going to kick us off. I know you have uncharacteristically very strong feelings, almost vitriol.
Just for a change.
Yeah. You're going to change it up a bit. And yeah. So I just wanted to kick us off. I did want to make one sort of point and then counterpoint. I guess I'm arguing against myself. But obviously they picked up Nino Niederreiter and Vladimir Nemestikov.
Meet Fran Stalinaskovich.
The Russian guy's name that I'm never going to be able to pronounce. But one of the counterpoints that I saw at the end of the deadline, given our inactivity, was that, well, you know, we're not one of the best top six, top four teams. So why squander assets for a remote chance at a Stanley Cup run? And I have to say, I disagree with that position vehemently and wholeheartedly. I think what gets lost here is that after next year or during next year, we have a bunch of UFAs. Mm-hmm. And if we think that next year is our time to put all our chips in the middle of the table, I think we're drastically underestimating or overestimating Kevin Cheveldayoff. Because what you don't want to do as an organization, more than anything, is let assets get away for free. Now, if we're in a position next year, similar to this year, where we're a wild card spot or fighting for a playoff spot or even a bit better, the Jets are going to be really reluctant to spend assets if they don't have, you know, let's say Mark Scheifele or PLD or Connor Hellebuck or Blake Wheeler locked up for any long-term deal. And I think this was, to me, sort of a waving of a white flag for this iteration of the Winnipeg Jets. And I disagree wholeheartedly that, oh, well, it doesn't matter. We have next year. We can push all our chips in then. Because I think the likelihood of that is much less than the likelihood that it was going to happen this year. And it didn't. Now, that's it. I'll set some picks now and let you take it away.
Okay. There's a lot to take in there. And I think you're going in the right direction. I'm really trapped in a glass case of emotion on this one. I'm going full Anchorman, Ron Burgundy.
I'm in a glass case of emotion.
Not Ron Jeremy.
It's a different podcast.
So, because it's, do we want to look at the trade deadline in a short-term viewpoint or a long-term viewpoint? And I think they could have done more to address both, and they addressed something, but not the underlying problem. On the surface, the deals for Niederreiter and Nemestikov are good deals, both in terms of what we received and what we gave up. Give me fuel, give me fire, give me Nino Niederreiter absolutely improves our top six. And Nemestikov improves our bottom six and could be the guy that unlocks some of the scoring punch from the third line and things that we've needed from the bottom six. So both of those things are good things. And early returns are there on both of those guys.
Yeah.
However, as you indicated, let's revisit the issues facing the Jets at the moment. In no particular order, they're the drag that Blake Wheeler has being had on the top six and the chaos that Neil Pionk brings to the back end. Neither of these moves addresses those problems.
Nope.
With Perfetti hurt, Nino moves into the top six without the corresponding move down of Wheeler. Okay, maybe Wheeler can even further help the bottom six if we were able to move him down. And with no moves on the back end, Pionk remains free to roam and create his dizzying vortex of chaos where everything happens all the time.
Captain Chaos.
So grading this trade deadline is kind of like grading an essay that didn't address all the underlying questions. The submitted parts are fine, but the more important parts of the exam were not answered. Put differently, it was like being asked to serve a four-course meal and only delivering the appetizer and the dessert. The much-needed entree was certainly missing when all was said and done. Are we better off than before the deadline? Marginally. Did we do anything to substantially address the nagging issues facing this team? Not at all. If we really liked this team as it's currently constructed, why then were we so involved, apparently, in the discussions on Meyer and Shikrin?
Right.
If we really thought we had everything we needed to make a strong push deep into the playoffs, we wouldn't have been this involved in those key potential trades. So to subsequently say we like how we're constructed is I have here written, somewhat disingenuous. I may need stronger language than that. It may be fully disingenuous. One of my favorite movies, Mike, and you know this, is Rounders, which is a drama about the underground world of high-stakes poker. There's a great quote that's applicable here. The main character, Mike McDermott, says to himself at a key turning point in the movie, "You can't lose what you don't put in the middle, but you can't win much either."
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, the best players on this team are good, but they're not getting better. They're on the back end of their careers. Well, maybe not Kyle Connor, but the core of these guys. And the uncertainty we have going forward, this was our year to push it in, regardless of what you thought, who we might be next year. I'm not sure we're better next year. That's my rant. I'll turn it over to you, Mike. What do you think?
Mic drop. Yeah, and there's ancillary consideration here as well.
No, like, there's only what I said, Mike. There are no other considerations. I'm kidding. Please go ahead. I apologize for interrupting you.
Like, one of the common, I think it was commonly reported that at a certain point, and it might have been shortly after the Niederreiter trade, but that the Winnipeg Jets did not want to trade any more picks. And again, in a vacuum, I understand that. And we were already a bit short-staffed, so to speak, with picks for next year as it was. But if you go through the, like, what players went for, and the example I'm going to use is Jacob Chychrun.
Yeah.
Now, at the end of the day, he went for a conditional 2023 first, a conditional 2024 second, and then a second in 2026. Now, like, if the Jets are not only looking for this year, but looking towards the future, he seemed to me a really good piece that would fit and mesh in with the existing, and then we could limit Logan Stanley's contributions to the team. But, you know, what are we going to get for our first year? Like, we're going to pick in the bottom 10, I would say. The odds of a draft pick hitting exponentially decrease after about pick 6. And so there was no guarantee for a first
year. But you're acquiring a fully formed player.
Right.
That will be absolutely a stalwart on your back end for the next 8 to 10 years. You literally don't need that first round draft pick.
Right.
And like if Jacob Chychrun, this version of Jacob Chychrun, was available with that pick, we would pick him.
And we would be super elated about it.
I agree.
And you know what it eliminates? You know what else it eliminates? It eliminates the need for Pionk and any offensive contributions that are greatly outweighed by his defensive deficiencies. And so I didn't understand to a certain extent, even the Meyer pick. This is Mirot's angle in his most recent article. I didn't realize this, but I guess Chevy came out as part of the post-deadline press conference and was a bit tongue-in-cheek saying, you know, there were some questions like, how come you didn't move more? How come you left $3 million of cap space on the table? Mm-hmm. And his answer was sort of, first, to be a bit of a dick and be like, well, this isn't fantasy hockey. Thanks, Chevy. And then second, it was, well, we need some cap space because, you know, we have bonuses for Perfetti and Sandberg that might kick in, and we need that space in order to have that comfort level, which, again, you can take that at face value. But even Meyer went for a pretty reasonable price. Now, I understand he wasn't going to stay here long term.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. And you don't want to give up assets unless you can get some term. I do understand that. But at the end of the day, he went for a first, a second, and a seventh. Mm-hmm. Now, whether that's the right decision or not, probably not. But just the white flag in the middle of the trade deadline saying, we're not giving any more picks. Well, how about Logan Stanley? He asked for a fucking trade.
Yeah.
maybe he's a trade asset. Nothing.
Yeah.
And then he's playing the next game. I don't understand the lack of urgency. And if I'm missing something, I would be happy to be wrong. But at the end of the day, it was this year or nothing. Because again, mm-hmm. and I hate to repeat myself, I don't see a scenario in which we don't have, unless we have most or all of our UFAs signed up to long-term deals, where we're going to be a significant buyer regardless of the state of this team in 2024. Because that really is a gamble. Because you could give away a bunch of picks and prospects, lose all your guys, and then you've really sunk. Like, there's a lot of sunk costs there. So I'm puzzled. I haven't seen a logical and cogent argument for why we were so inactive at the trade deadline. The only thing that was posited was, well, nobody wants to come to Winnipeg. I don't buy it. Yeah. I mean, the Timo Meyers don't want to sign here, but there was a whole. There's Bukestad, Granlin, Eller, like. Kane, I didn't want him anyway, but there's lots of really good quality players, bottom six, even fringe top six, that don't have no movement clauses, mm-hmm. that went for very reasonable prices, and the fact that we just sat the last part of the trade deadline out is very vexing.
Two quick things. The first has two subpoints. The body language for Niederreiter since he's got here has been phenomenal. He's had a smile on his face since he got here.
Yeah.
So there was no Winnipeg issue there. Perhaps having played, you know, in the Central, maybe he's a little bit more familiar with Winnipeg. He knows it's not a terrible place. I don't know. But for me, his body language has been great. And I've also read that Domestikov waived his no trade clause.
Oh, now, I didn't know that.
Yes, I'm pretty certain about that.
Okay.
The other thing I was going to say is here we are. 10 days after the trade deadline, two guys who follow the Jets very closely, we can grasp things. Just give us, as you said, a cogent argument, and we're willing to listen, right? We may not agree. We may have preferred a different path, but we're willing to listen. We're reasonable men. And here we are 10 days out, still as perplexed as if the trade deadline had closed 15 minutes ago. Nothing has been offered in the past 10 days to answer those questions. Now, everyone has said the deals that were made were good, but the problem was the deals that weren't made.
Right.
Yep. And I think that's where we're going, and it's disappointing. Now, just to segue a little bit here, we take a look, the Jets lost just Niederreiter's first game on the 28th of February, lose to the Kings in overtime. A little bit disappointing on that one. Couldn't handle Kopitar, 4 goals. And then on the night of the trade deadline, Jets get hammered in Edmonton. And I don't mean in a good way. They didn't go out and...
IPA Friday?
It was not IPA. It was IPA eye test Friday night. Apparently it was, you know, red wine Thursday night for the Jets because they looked like they were not in it. In that game, you know, they're going against the Oilers, number one penalty power play in the league.
Just take a bunch of penalties.
You know, just don't take penalties. They took nine. They took nine penalties. Okay. So they got rolled over pretty good. Jets come back home and eke out a 7-5 win over the Oilers on Saturday night. A much better performance, but the Oilers still look like they could be that dominant team in the West. And yeah, if you put good. A gun to my head, I think they're coming out of the West. The Jets then snatch defeat from the jaws of victory and lose 3-2 to the Sharks on Monday. That was a tough one, giving up that goal with 10 seconds left. Seconds, I mean, yeah. It was an absolute disastrous last shift for Blake Wheeler, first icing the puck and then giving up a face-off in our own zone. We hadn't been able to win a face-off all night.
He's had a bunch again, of those.
Yeah, and then it was an unfortunate deflection off his stick right under the stick of Thomas Hertl to tie the game up, and then the Jets lose in overtime. The Jets then lose again 4-2 the Wild, as all of us know. They played really well that game. It was a reverse Jets game, anti-PDO game, where the Jets had all the shots, all the play, but couldn't score. And then somewhat redeemed themselves this weekend, although I wouldn't go fully there, with a couple wins in Florida. Good? Aesthetically pleasing games? No, they weren't. No, they were not.
No,
they were
And to that, like, it, in the last four, they've anytime they outshoot and outplay a team, they lose.
Yeah.
And anytime they get outshot and outplayed, they seem to win. It is really a bizarre world situation because, as you referenced, like, the Wild game, I thought that was one of our better games and probably deserved to win that one. Even the Sharks game, there was some unfortunate circumstances, as you highlighted. But I against the Panthers and the Lightning, you know, we got outchanced, we got outplayed, and, you know, we lost the expected goals battle, but we won. And obviously, we can thank our goaltender for that. But, you know, it is a weird, you know, I guess it's atypical but typical at the same time for the Winnipeg Jets in that, you know, we have, even this year, we've won our fair share of games where we've been outplayed and we out-goalie and out-shoot our opponent. So it is sort of regression to the mean, so to speak, to have some of that befall us. But it's just, I can never... It's not good for my ticker, Bon. That's all I'm saying.
No, and it's not because, you know, the games that they dominate and you want to feel good about, they end up losing. So you go, you kick the dog before you go to bed. I don't have a dog. Everyone,
you read one just to kick it.
Ooh, can you do that?
I'm
kidding.
Sure,
no. I would never kick a dog. Come on, being silly here. But it's like when they play well, you can't enjoy it because they end up losing. And when they win, they get caved, so you can't even enjoy when they win. So it's the hope that kills you, as they say.
It's the beauty of the catch-22. Well, so a bit of a quick rundown. We did want to get obviously to the trade deadline first. But all in all, you would include. I'm going to include the trade deadline as part of our Mac to Whack continuum.
Okay, that is. I have another rant.
Oh,
another rant here. But I'll start off, and then we'll do a quick Mac Whack, and then I'll go into my rant. So, all right. If you include the trade deadline, I'm moving up from a 5 to a 6.5 because I do like the deals. I like the deals. So the larger issue I'll get to in a second, in a fun way. It's not very serious. It's a fun way. But, you know, I think the play of the guys they acquired has really spoken to the value that they bring, which is good. I still think there's problems, unresolved problems. And I think getting the two wins in Florida are going to be important building blocks. Listen, this week doesn't get easier for them.
No.
But they needed something fast or it was going to continue to go downhill very ugly. So I'm going to give it a 6. That's too much. No, I like the trades. The guys have been performing well. I'm going to give it 6.5. You go, and then I'm going to give my rant.
All right. Well, I'm going the exact opposite direction. I would have just sort of the games played at a 6.5, but I'm bringing it down to a 4.5 because I'm grading the trade deadline on a curve. And I think what we didn't do speaks louder than what we did do. I couldn't agree with you more. The acquisitions that we did make, I think, you know, small sample size, obviously, but they've been terrific. And I'm already a huge fan of Nino Niederreiter.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, we needed more for any sort of realistic Stanley Cup push. So I'm going 4.5.
I think you're probably right. I think you're the wise one on this one. So I'm just pumped up for my rant here. Now, again, people, for the dozens and dozens listening across the world, this isn't fun. I wrote it in fun. The Winnipeg Jets have a very laudable and public program called Project 11. This project was created to honor former Jets and Manitoba Moose player Rick Rippon. Its goal is to support mental health awareness for students from an early age and aims to help them develop the understanding that they can positively influence their own mental wellness by learning skills and adopting healthy coping strategies into their lives. It's amazing stuff. Visit project11.ca for more information. However, there seems to be a parallel project ongoing. This is where it gets fun, everyone. Okay. One seemingly as well-intended, but unfortunately not having the same incredible positive impact as Project 11. And I'm talking about Project 26-4. The objective of this project is to promote the on-ice performance of Winnipeg Jets number 26 and number 4 by marshaling all of the on-ice talent available to ensure these two make the impact management imagines they can. Now, I'm not sure what else can explain their usage when compared to their impact. I've previously shared that, in my opinion, the Jets needed, absolutely needed, to address Wheeler, getting him out of the top six and Pionk out of the top four D-men. They each play too many minutes in too many important situations. This is important because I think this is part of the why the Jets are struggling. Let me be clear about Blake Wheeler. He is a Winnipeg Jets legend. He was an elite NHL winger for the better part of a decade. Yeah. His career with the Jets should be celebrated. His number should be hanging from the rafters in Canada Life Place very soon after he retires. The manner in which he has handled the removal of the C from his jersey has been exemplary. However, his time as a play-driving winger has passed. The continued insistence to play him in the top six consistently drags down the performance of his linemates. This is not only hurting the Jets now, okay, and I just referenced the San Jose game, it will hurt the legacy of one of the key pillars of Jets 2.0 history. This is an affront to both the fans and the number 26, whether he recognizes it or not. As for Captain Chaos, I'm not sure what is driving the insistence of playing him 20 minutes a night in all situations. How Nate Schmidt gets healthy scratched, but nothing happens to Pionk as a result of his poor play. This remains a complete mystery to me. The team does so much to try to make him go, and nothing seems to be working. Perhaps it's just the timing of the line changes, but he seems to get a few shifts each night with Morrissey, and I'm not sure if this is an attempt to improve Pionk's stats or to worsen JMO's stats. So it's time to wind down Project 26-4 as quickly as possible. Okay, with the trade deadline behind us, the only way this can be addressed is through pushing Wheeler down the lineup. I think you mentioned in a tweet recently, Mike, maybe trying him at center on the third line, which I think would be interesting. And limiting the time of Captain Chaos. I'm sorry, Mike, I had to get that off my chest.
Amen, hallelujah.
I have exorcised the demons.
1,000% concur on that. Watching Blake Wheeler fumble around with a puck, and I always check the giveaway stats after every game, and I don't know, I'm going to look further into how those are tracked, because I count about 7 a game, and they have them at a meager like 1 or 2. And I can't comprehend that. Pionk's the
Mike,
same.
Mike, you must first acquire possession before you give
Maybe
it away.
That's it. It's like the fumble rule. You get like you got to hold the ball for 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's just an incomplete pass.
And the insistence on Pionk's minutes are I don't know if we're watching the same game. I always would like to defer to NHL head coaches and their sort of expertise or quasi lack thereof. He makes the team worse across the board, and in any metric you look at, and we still play him, which hurts our chances of winning. So I wish I had a better rebuttal, but I don't. I 100% agree.
Shall we move on to pre-boarding announcements?
Let's do it. I think I know who's in your penalty box.
No, it's going to surprise you, but let's start off with First Class.
Okay.
First Class assignment brought to you by First Mining Gold, providing First Class gold mining development advice and services since 2015. I have an honorable mention here, but I want to nominate Morgan Barron.
Oh, that's a good one.
I like his game.
Yeah.
He plays to his strengths each night and has demonstrated a level of consistency that would behoove the rest of the Jets to emulate. His game is simple, and I think we truly get his best every night. One area of his game where we could get a little bit more is scoring. Okay.
Yeah, but
I think he has 7 goals and 9 assists so far this year. He's had 2 in his last 5, which is much better. I mean, extrapolate that over the season, and it's roughly 30 goals. So we're not going to get that from Morgan Barron.
Yeah.
Okay. But if we can get that up to 15 or maybe 20 in a great year, that's what would be optimal from his position on the third line. Okay. And I'll tell you what, with a name like Morgan Barron, you better be comfortable in First Class. So come on up for the first time this year, Morgan. Hopefully it's not the last. Who do you got, Mike?
Quick on Barron, I've noticed his play of late. I think he's been a real catalyst on that line, and Lowry's been injured and sort of in and out of the lineup, and I don't think he's playing at 100%. And it's a credit to him, I guess, but it's something where I think his play over the past 5-6 games has been great. I'm going to go probably chalk a little bit. I'm going to go Nino Niederreiter.
Yeah, he was going to get an honorable mention. I forgot to mention that, but yeah, good one. Go.
Yeah, like he's as advertised. He shoots first. He's got more skill with the puck than I had first realized. He's got a little sandpaper. He's big. He takes the body. You know, the scouting report on him was that he is obviously an excellent hockey player, but sometimes can be disengaged. And to your point earlier, I think he's been nothing but engaged since he's got here, and he seems like just a real good guy. Not that I can tell from 30,000 feet away, but you know, his game stat cards. He was really good against the Sharks. He was first in that one, and he's been in the top 10 and top 3 in the forwards just sort of analytically since he's been here. He's putting up points, so he's in my first class. Again, we mentioned it, but really good acquisition, and I really like his game.
Yeah, he's fit really well with Scheifele so far.
Yeah.
And that's really good because I'd like to see Connor go back with PLD when he's back.
Yes, please.
And then Niederreiter can work well with – and let's put Ehlers wherever he fits best. I'm not sure. You know, even if we wanted to go – that line was so dominant for a short period of time when they had it working, Connor, PLD, and Ehlers.
Yeah.
I do think Niederreiter and Scheifele and even Wheeler can get some work done as the second line. So, yeah, good call.
All right,
let's go to the penalty box. Brought to you by the personal injury law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe. Through your aches and pains, we'll get you monetary gains. Call us at 1-800-BEARATREE. All right, so, Mike, you go first this time.
All right, well, I'm going to give a quick honorable mention. I guess a dishonorable mention. I'm going to go my real pick is Connor Hellebuyck. It pains me. I think this will be his first time, maybe ever, in the penalty box on this podcast.
I put him there once. But, I recall.
But I just want to quickly digress to Nick Ehlers, and you know I have been a staunch defender. You have been more rational as you usually are in terms of some of the holes in his game, and I obviously know that his statistical prowess is bar none some of the best of the Winnipeg Jets, and his driving of play, his ability to enter the zone with sort of unfettered ease is just incredible to watch. But does he care? He gets 14 minutes of ice time, and all I get is soundbite saying, "Well, you know, I'm 100% or I'm not 100%," and it's the kind
he's
of the
Danish. Just, he's
I know,
Danish,
but I want fire in the belly.
Forlorn.
Like, off.
He's upset. He's despondent.
I guess
he's Hamlet on skates. Come on.
Anyway, I digress. So Hellebuyck, obviously before the Florida games, which he stole for us and was once again incredible. You know, a save percentage, a stat I don't really care for. Goals saved above expected is obviously the much better stat. But starting with Colorado, he was 808, 865, 833, 857, and 864. And was just, three, four or five goals a game. And, for better or worse, obviously for worse, when he plays like that, an average to below average goaltender, we're going to lose. And we're going to lose 90% of the time. And, again, he has these slight dips. He looks like he's back on track. But he did cost us some games, I thought. And that's very rare. And, again, with much chagrin, I'm going to put him in the penalty box.
Yeah, I've been, I wonder if all the minutes he's played to date have worn him down a little bit. I don't know. Like, he'll come and play back-to-back and play very well and play very well in the second half of back-to-back. So that kind of speaks against that theory. But something has not been right in the state of Denmark. For a little bit now with Connor Hellebuyck. So I'm picking up what you're throwing down there. For me, I'm putting in the PLD in the penalty box.
Oh.
Okay. Since January 17th, the game against Montreal, that infamous game against Montreal where all the rumors crept back into the commentary swirling around the Jets, he's scored only 4 goals and 2 assists in 17 games. He's a -9. Yes, I use plus-minus.
Oh, there you
and
go.
And has 31 penalty minutes and 13 minor penalties over that
period. Yeah, I noticed that.
Once the most noticeable player on the ice for his dominant physical play, he's recently become invisible. He's quite suddenly went from completely dialed in to utterly disinterested. Perhaps he's injured, okay? He's missed a couple games recently, and there's speculation that he's been hurt for some time.
Yeah.
A nagging groin injury has been speculated.
Right.
If this is the case, perhaps he can reach out to us at the 1-800 number I just that is associated with our sponsor here is 1-800-BARRATRY. So call that PLD if you're hurt. Let us know, and we'll get you out of the penalty box. Okay. If, like I said, we'll give you the pardon and we'll put Logan Stanley back into his comfort zone, okay, in the penalty box. Because his comfort zone surely isn't his own end of the ice, despite how much time he spends there on a nightly basis.
Nice. Is he quiet quitting? I thought about that. He was on my list of potential penalty box inductees.
Quiet quitters.
This week.
No, I think he's trying. I think he's trying.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I get it.
It's not trying to quit. I think he's trying to succeed and just... Being horrible at it.
At doing so. Okay, yeah. No, good one. All right, let's do a little in-flight entertainment.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
I think how you said you have 5 questions tonight. My questions are lackluster. I'm looking at them over here, so we'll just do your 5. How about that?
Okay, sounds good. All right, well, again, depending on what where you draw the line in the sand, obviously the Jets got off to a really hot start in their first 30 games. They were 21-9, and since that are just middling at a 500 hockey team. What multiple choice question? What do you feel is the largest contributor to this slide? And I already know your answer because well, you'll see. A, goaltending. B, bad coaching. C, poor shooting. D, Blake Wheeler and Pionk.
No, I'm gonna say bad coaching. To be honest, I'm honestly going to say that. I mean, the tumultuous nature of the lineup, I think, has not helped us. We talked about this a little bit on the previous podcast. I do think that this is something that seemed to help in November, shake the lineup up a little bit. But I do think that the constant churn in the lines has prevented, you know, anyone really getting settled and able to. I mean, it is a balancing act. You want your players, comfortable, but not too comfortable, right?
Yeah.
But what we have seen is just a movement for the sake of movement and not to fix problems, but just to do it for the sake of doing it. And we've seen guys go out of the lineup that have been playing well and guys that have been hurting us, two of which you mentioned, simply stay in the same positions, if not have their roles expanded after poor play. So I think all of those things are contributing, but the number one thing I think here is just we had answers for one point of the year, okay? But the landscape changes, the league evolves, and we're in a different place now. It's a different world than it was 30 minutes ago from one of my favorite movies, okay? And I don't think we have the answers now. We don't have March answers. We had November answers. We had December answers. We don't have March answers. And I'm looking at the coaching staff. What do you think, Mike?
Well, I think you just swayed my decision. My original posit was poor shooting. And again, it's something where even a slight dip in shooting percentage can have sort of exponentially large ramifications to a team's win-loss record. And, you know, as you have so astutely pointed out many times on this podcast, the difference between the Jets winning and losing sometimes is one goal, between two goals and three goals. And if your shooting percentage dips by, 1%, 1.5%, 2%, that represents, 30 goals, 32 goals, all of which can be, obviously they're not all going to be evenly spread out. But, is the difference between winning and losing in a lot of instances. And we had a really bad stretch. Our bottom six all went on a horrific goal-scoring slump. And the top six could only carry so much.
I know. I've seen it before. Vaughn Mitchell at the club. There was a long dry spell there. It lasted for many years. Shots were taken. Goals were not scored. Goals were not scored, I can assure you.
But I really
it's
like
called
your
the
answer.
90s. It's the 90s.
All right. This one's a little more direct. And I know maybe take a few shots at Crown Royal because you're always too logical for these. Should Kevin Cheveldayoff be fired after the season?
Here's the problem with that. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes, in the sense that everything I've been led to believe that Chipman is a very involved owner. He could have orchestrated great trades that weren't executed because the owner wouldn't sign off on them. So we don't know. I don't think Chevy runs the organization and has the room to move like the people assume that he does. And maybe that part of this isn't, whatever he said, this isn't fantasy hockey. You know, he's got an owner to answer to, and he's got to run these things through his owner. Now, if he set up a whole bunch of things and the owner is saying, no, 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 this is the way we're going forward, then why would we fire him? It would be cowardice to have him, if this is the case, he go to the owner and say, look at all these things we could do. All I need is your sign off. The owner goes, no, our team is good enough. And then the team doesn't win. We fire the general manager for not making moves. That's my concern. All I'm saying is I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. It's not that simple. Now, if the reality is he was given the mandate to do things and this is all we got, then a first round knockout may be enough to trigger that.
Yeah. So I'm going to go, you and your logic, I'm going yes. And this is kind of a base reaction, but you know, Chevy's been at this for 13 years. Very few GMs in any professional sport get that long of a rope. And I can confidently say the results with the Winnipeg Jets haven't been commensurate with the longevity of his tenure. I mean, you can't be this mediocre at your job and keep it for this long. I understand.
I look at my own career. I mean, you're saying you need to caveat that in the NHL.
In the NHL. Sorry.
Because in the public sector, it's a way of life, my friend.
Fail up. But again, at the end of the day, it's something I understand that it is it's a small market atmosphere. It's harder. It's harder to be a GM for the Winnipeg Jets than it is for the New York Rangers. Full stop. No argument there. But if the long-term success of this organization is going to be fruitful at all, I think a change needs to be made. And, you know, you raise a valid point. We don't know the dynamics between Chevy and the ownership. I can't. That's giving him a little too much benefit of the doubt. I can't see that level of ownership interference where he's basically just a figurehead and they are making all the calls and then letting him be the public face of it. Because to me, that's not fair. That's cowardice. As much as people like to shut themselves off in a bubble, they know and are at least have some idea that there's a significant portion of Winnipeg Jets fandom that is not pleased with some of the moves that have been made over the past 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Anyway, if I had a vote, that would be my vote. He's gone.
All right.
Little lighter. Dylan wore the A.
Yeah.
Last game. Good move?
I was a little surprised, but not shocked. I suppose he does a lot. I suppose that does speak to something that didn't happen at the trade deadline. Like, he's not going to get moved. You know, obviously he's very valued by the organization. I do think that it lends some balance to the leadership group in the sense that he's a little bit older. You don't want all young guys carrying that weight.
Yeah.
He's relatively new to the organization. So it just speaks to what they think of him, I guess. Who would you look to, maybe some of the names? Well, is it a Kyle Connor? Well, from all I've heard, he's just a pretty quiet guy.
Yeah, I think he's almost a mute.
So I'm not sure you go there. I think it would be awkward maybe to go back to a Wheeler. That would just be weird. You know, there's a lot of uncertainty around PLD, so it's not going to go there. You know, we've talked a lot about what does Nick Ehlers really mean to this franchise? Are we in love with him, or are we holding him back?
All those types of things. You're not going to give it to a guy who plays 14 minutes a night.
Yeah, and then from there, I'm not sure. I was interested to see that they actually did something like that, as opposed to such a conservative organization might just go, well, we're not going to replace so and so, and da-da-da-da-da, like, you know, teams do with a captain. Like, way back in the day, if your captain missed a game, someone else got to be the captain for that game.
Right.
But now that they don't do that anymore. So I was kind of a little bit surprised that they did it, but less surprised with who they did it with. So, you know, I think it's a bit of a non-factor practically and for the viewing audience, but it is interesting. I think it speaks to what the players in the organization think of him. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, he's rocking a sweet 80s mullet, so points in his favor for that.
Yeah,
Iron Maiden. I think this is probably, to a certain degree, a bit of a dressing room pick. He does seem to be, you know, the more I see him interviewed in sound bites, he seems like a not only a smart guy, but a well-liked guy. And he, you know, he's your sandpaper, intangibles, fight when needs to be fight. I was like, really? Brenda Dillon? But I did the exact exercise you just did. I was like, well, I don't think it's going to be Ehlers. And Connor doesn't seem extremely suited for an assistant captain role, especially when you don't have a captain, because obviously there's a larger shared responsibility from the assistant captains when you don't have a true captain. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, yeah, good for him. You know, like we mentioned it, I think it was last podcast, he's been playing well and he's getting zone entries and contributing on the offensive end. It's the best he's looked since he's been here. So why not?
I agree. Keep going, Mike. You're on a roll.
All right. Now, did we really improve on the PK this year, or is it just Hellebuck returning to form as compared to last year?
That's a great – it's something I haven't examined very closely. I know – I was just looking at it the other day. It feels like we're worse than we are. Like, there's a lot of zeros in my column here for opponent power play score. Like, we've only given up 34 goals – all year, and we've scored, and we think our power play is so terrible. We've scored 47 on the power play.
Right.
We've only given up 34, you know, so what is that? Plus 13 on special teams.
That's good.
You know, I don't know. Like, Lowry's always been a pretty good penalty killer. Apparently, Saku went a line, and that's what's keeping him in the lineup. It's certainly not his 5-on-5 play.
It's not.
You know, it does look disturbingly the way it used to. It's not quite as passive. I still think we give up the blue line. I often marvel. It's just like we give up the blue line to every other team.
Everybody.
And we can't get it. Why don't we just look at what other teams do and do the same thing?
Thought the exact same thing.
And then maybe if you know, that's not the right way to do it. If everyone else is stopping us from entering the zone by doing X, maybe we should try that. Anyways, you know, this Hellebuck thing, he is an elite goaltender. I don't want anything I'm going to say here construed to minimize his impact. But, you know, he doesn't make – I mean, he's a great positional goalie. He's huge, and he's super smart, and he can read the play super well, and he just lets the puck hit him. And what he's done better is – been able to dampen that and be able to not give up a lot of rebounds. I think that's really helped him out this year. And I don't know. I don't know really what's been the trigger, because it's not obviously, it's not obvious to the untrained eye that's watching what the difference is.
Okay.
But it's got to be driven. It's got to be a number of small things that and maybe we're not taking a ton of penalties, I don't think, and that helps. And then, you know, we're probably the pre-scout. A lot of players have talked about how well prepared they are. Perhaps we know we can do some slight tactical adjustments to take things away from teams that want to lean one way or the other in terms of how they set up. But I have to admit, there's nothing that really jumps out at me. What do you think?
Exactly that. I you know, I've watched intently the past month, 2 months, trying to discern the exact difference, because as you said, it certainly isn't preventing entries into the zone, because we still give that away like candy on Halloween. And, you know, in terms of our positioning, looks relatively similar. Aggression, like, I don't know. I think Lowry has sort of free reign to be a little more aggressive. Everyone else is just as passive, not as passive with Maurice, because we just collapse on top of Hellebuck And it was almost comical how far in caved in we were. But at the end of the day, so I don't see it. You're right. There might be a number of micro. I liked your. There's probably better scouting. I like that one. I'm going to go with that. That sounds like the most, you know, Occam's razor, right? That sounds like the most logical explanation for things. But it got me thinking. It was like, well, Hellebuck had a down year. He's back to Vezina form. It's, you know, we might not be third, but we were third for a long time in PK. Is the difference 80% that? Shorter answer is I don't know.
Just building on your point about pre-scout, something I have noticed is, you know, for me, when I watch film, I watch a lot of film of different sport, football. You know, so I'm looking at how people react, their tendencies. So body movement's a big thing for me. And one thing I have picked up this year is the Jets are more proactive in their PK in the sense of thinking, where's the puck going to go next? And I think where they were under Paul Maurice was set up, don't move. If and when the puck moves, then we move. Don't think about where it's going to go. You know, so they have sticks and lanes. They're thinking of where the puck's going to go next. They're you know, is there a crossing pass opportunity? They're trying to get to take that away. So it's not the collapse and react. It's a little bit more expansive and reading of the plays. And I think, as we talked about, maybe there's a strong element of their pre-scout. They know they're going to pass around and they want to set up here. I think that's inversely, that's what's hurting us on our power play. We want to work it around and we want to move it over to Kyle Connor to take the low percentage shot from the bottom of the circle. So, you know, teams just let us do that. And then, you know, Kyle Connor either has a perfect shot or he doesn't. And lately, more often than not, he hasn't been finishing on those. And we have no other answer. So, let's go with pre-scout. And it's something I've seen, too. They seem to be thinking their way through the game a little bit more than simply just reacting.
No, I like it. All right, we'll end on this one. It sets the table. Will the Winnipeg Jets make the playoffs?
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs.
And depending on your answer, if so, what do you think about their first round chances?
Oh, boy. I do think they'll make the playoffs.
I do.
I really, really do. And what happens in the first round? Well, we've said for some time now that regardless of where the Jets land, it's going to be a coin flip. So right now, if the season ended today, it would be Minnesota. Now, did not perform very well against Minnesota the first two times we played them this year, and I would have been very pessimistic. But we handled them pretty good. We did lose the game 4-2. But, boy, we what did we put up, 48 shots in that game?
We took it to them.
And, you know, that gave me some hope that we can have a competitive seven-game series. There aren't very many teams on our side of the ledger, like – it's insane that I'm looking at this right now, and Edmonton and Colorado are in the wild card position. That's insane.
That is insane.
It's insane. I think Colorado is going to do damage. They'll likely be as healthy as they've been all year.
I don't want to play Colorado. You know, thank you.
No. They're in a wild card with a +25 goal differential. So, they're ready to go. They're going to emerge from their early season woes and their injury concerns, and they're going to get going. Edmonton, I just think is super dominant, and they've now amassed enough pieces to be very deadly in the playoffs. Of course, their goaltending will be a concern, as will Colorado be. Could we goalie our way through a round or two? Possibly.
Yeah.
But I think it's a coin flip all the way through, to be honest. I don't see us really, we've played well against Seattle this year. We've played well against Los Angeles. We've also played poorly against Los Angeles. We haven't played very well against Vegas this year.
No,
we've played well enough against Dallas this year. So, the two teams I'd like to avoid are Edmonton and Colorado. And if we get anyone else, maybe with the possible exception of Vegas, it's a coin flip. So we could be out first round. We could be conference finalists.
Simpatico, my friend. Yeah, as long as we don't face Edmonton or Colorado in the first round, then, I'm sure, obviously, all the pundits will have their odds, but I'm going to go into those optimistically. Otherwise, I'm going to start looking at next season at that time. So, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. You want to take us out?
So, fellow travelers, that's it for this episode of the podcast. Thanks for joining us in the Airport Lounge. Check us out on Twitter at AirportLounge55, with all episodes also available on Apple, Spotify, and Overcast Podcasts. Be sure to come back next week to the Airport Lounge, because the first round is always on us. That's why we only have a podcast every 2 weeks. We couldn't afford this every week. Until then, go Jets, go. He said, son, I made a life out of reading people's faces, knowing what the cards were by the way they held their eyes. So if you don't mind me saying, I can see you're out of aces. For a taste of your whiskey, I'll give you some advice. So I handed him my bottle, and he drank down my last swallow. Then he bummed a cigarette and asked me for a light. And the night got deathly quiet, and his face lost all expression. Said, if you're gonna play the game, boy,